me introduce the next storyteller, Tom Lahn.
Well, I was normal once, but I didn't like it. In fact, I have a quote. It's my favorite quote. I love it so much I had it tattooed on the back of my hand. I refer to it all the time. I'd like to share it with you. Wrong hand. Whoa. Normal is not something to aspire to. It's something to get away from. And I have spent my entire life trying to get away from it. My dad was a Southern Baptist minister. That means my sister and I, were what? PKs. We were the ones that you whisper about, right? I know what you say, the worst kind, the wild ones and all that, and I'll have to tell you, I contributed to that whole brand. You do what you have to do. Preacher's kids, no matter what you think, I'll tell you when they are just unbelievable. When they're little teeny weeny little ones. You can just hold them in your hands. We are what I would call cute and or precious. Congregations would just pass around us like little offering plates. There were a lot of firsts being a little preacher's kids. The first one was I was first born, so I got all the attention. The second one was I was born into First Baptist Church in Front Royal, Virginia. Now, can you imagine waking up on Sunday and say, I can't wait to go to Second Baptist or Third or Fourth or Fifth? No, I was first. And the third thing, as a little preacher's kid, you get to go to be first in line for dinner on the grounds every time. Best piece of chicken and best dip of congealed salad. It was awesome. I learned how to play chopsticks on a pipe organ in church. The Living Nativity was at our church every Christmas season. But I had the donkey, the goats, and the sheep in my garage. I was center of the universe. I'll tell you just how center. Back then, there were landlines. You had to pick up the phone. You connected with an operator. The operator would ask your number and patch you to that number. All I had to do was pick up the phone and go, operator, operator, give me my dad. And I was patched into his office at church. Amazing. When I was about 6 or 7 years old, we had moved from Front Royal to Norfolk. And dad went down to the Sunday school classes and he kind of recruited a bunch of kids, about 10 of us, to come up to the big church on Sunday, and he had a microphone, and he just went down the line with each one of us and asked us, what did we want to be when we grew up? So we got up there, and this one kid, you know, I want to be a butcher, a baker, candlestick maker, blah, 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 all the way down the line. He gets to my sister, who is 4 at the time, and he says, Nell, and he gets down on one knee. He says, what do you want to be when you grow up? Nell looked at him and said, Dad, I want to be a minister just like you. The congregation swooned. The offering plates overflowed. And I am sitting there just going, you gotta be kidding. So I couldn't wait for my turn. Son, what do you want to be when you grow up? I looked up at him and said, Dad, I want to be a bank robber. I mean, I was thinking fast. I was really thinking fast. The cool thing is that the congregation laughed like you did. My mom was in the choir, and she laughed even louder. And my dad laughed. And he said, you've been watching too much TV, son. Well, you know, I thought that was really great. Not what he said, but what I said. So that was kind of the way it went. My sister started taking the front pew position in the church. I was way back there, back pew sort of a guy. And you started kind of seeing how our life unfolded as a family. My mom, my dad, my sister, and me. I guess it would have been the beginning of my ninth grade year. We moved to Gainesville, Florida. And it was summertime, so school hadn't started, and there were about 60 kids in what would be the freshman class. And so the teachers and the principals and the parents decided to pull us all together before school so we could get to know each other. Great idea. And so they arranged for us to go out to a camp for about 3 days together. Camp was great. Everybody's meeting everybody. This is really neat, you know. Dad would, you know, just being there, First Baptist Church in Gainesville, a preacher's kid, all is right with the world. We go to the mess hall for lunch, and we're sitting down, and Mrs. Ruby Gertner stands up. She introduces herself as the chairman of the board of deacons' wife at First Baptist Church. And she wanted to introduce Tom as the new preacher's kid. And everybody applauded. And Tom is going to be in our class. And then she looked at me and said, "Tom, would you say the prayer for us before lunch?" And I went, Mrs. Gertner looked at me again and said, "Tom, just stand up, just a short prayer." And I said, "No, ma'am, Mrs. Gertner." Well, she stumbled through the prayer. But I knew when she said amen, it was not over. So I beelined it home after camp. And I'm going to tell Mom exactly what happened. But not at first. So I'm just telling her the good parts. It was a great camp. Everybody got to know each other. What a terrific idea. And the phone rang. "Hello, Ruby," my mother said. "No, Tom was just telling me about camp. It just sound, what a, I can't thank you enough for doing this. This is going to mean so much to him when school starts. What a terrific idea." "No, he didn't tell me that part." "He did what?" "You say it's not normal if a preacher's kid doesn't pray?" "No, I'm not planning on punishing Tom." "No, let me tell you why. When Fred, you know, when he was just a little kid, he wanted to be a preacher. It's been his calling his whole life. And everyone in his family supported that, and he is a minister. I chose to marry him. Therefore, I chose to be a minister's wife. Tom and his sister Nell didn't have that choice. They were born into this. So Fred and I, before we ever even had children, we said that no matter what they wanted to be, we were going to support it. They were going to be who they would be." And then she said, "And Ruby, if Tom had put yourself in his shoes, if he had prayed that day, he would have been asked to pray at every event, every gathering from that day forth." They hung up. I'm sitting on a sofa just across from the telephone listening to this, and Mom came over and just hugged me. She didn't say anything, but you know, that was a defining moment, because I knew she had my back. My mom had my back. So, let's move to when I was in college. I won't tell you the exact year, because I was the part of the half that made the top half possible. So it took me a little while between beginning and end. It was a long middle. So somewhere in my 20s, I lived in a neighborhood that, about a neighborhood away, there was a little kind of falling down frame, white little frame house. I had a picket fence, small yard, never mowed. Everybody in that area knew that was Miss Perry's house. Now, there were all sorts of stories floating around Miss Perry, so I just have to tell you some that I remember. But Miss Perry supposedly was in her late 90s. She could have been literally 100 plus, many said. She was a spinster, and she had lived in that house forever, always alone. The unique thing about her house was that who did live with Miss Perry were cats. She could have had 50, she could have had 100. Everybody had a different number of cats. And they were running everywhere, you know, under the fence, cracked doors left open, you know, windows. It didn't matter. Cats. Across from Miss Perry's house, there was an elementary school. Kids would see Miss Perry come out in the yard or stand on the porch. They would run over and grab the picket fence and they'd say, "Cat lady, cat lady, cat lady." And then they'd start another chant. "You eat cat food, you eat cat food." I watched this happen one day. I couldn't believe it. It was close to Christmas. So I asked Mom and Dad and Nell if we could go over to Miss Perry's and if we could sing a few carols for her. So the night before Christmas, dark, she had a little light bulb on the front porch. We walk up, we knock on the door, we start singing Silent Night. And Miss Perry opens the screen door and comes out on the porch. I noticed that night while we were singing that her eyes were glazed. She must have had cataracts. And I don't really think she could see us. About by the second song, I reached over and just hugged her and wished her well. And she wouldn't let go. I experienced aloneness. Fast forward. These last couple of years have been really tough. We were living in in Tallahassee, Florida, my wife and I, and we started visiting here, and we noticed some changes going on with my mom and my sister. My dad passed away back in 2002, and they had moved back here when he retired. So we noticed enough changes with my mom and sister that we decided to move here. And my sister passed away about a year and a half ago with early onset Alzheimer's. It was really rough. So my mom is now 93, and we're here taking care of her. She'll tell you that she's 6. She uses her maiden name. She calls me her boy. She says I am the greatest thing in the United States of America. She is so right. And I will, in fact, another thing is she always asks me, "Do you have a mom?" And I'll go, "Yes, Mom." "You're my mom." And she'll say, "Well, I know she's proud of you." She is a pistol. She wakes up in the morning and she kickstarts every day. Her feet, when they hit the floor, it's like this. She sings, we dance. She is a joyful human. It is terrific. Every night. I hold her. And I say, "You will never experience aloneness. I've got your back."